Welcome to the first episode of the Heart of a Fighter podcast. This podcast is going to be a motivational podcast. It's going to be fitness oriented. It's going to have a lot to do with my interest in fitness. It's going to have all of that's going to be wrapped around motivation. Because I want you guys to be healthy. I want you guys to be happy. I want you guys to be fit. And I want to do it in a way that's honest. And I want it to come from someone with a lot of experience. Right? And I have a lot of experience. My name's Johan Francis, CSCS. I'm CSCS certified. I have been for 4 years, and I'm a trainer. So this podcast, like I said, is the first one, right? And it's going to sound a lot like a guy sitting in his living room recording stuff on his phone, but I assure you that's exactly what's happening. Over time, I want this to grow into something a little bit bigger, and so the quality will kind of upgrade along the way. I intend to look at articles probably from LinkedIn, other things that I see on the internet from Yahoo, and maybe even people that I see on Twitter that have credible ideas about fitness, and I'm going to break them down for you. Right? Because in my 15 years as a trainer, I see even to this day a lot of misinformation left and right. And I'm sure everyone does. Because fitness is so goddamn gimmicky. And I feel like most people, when they go into the gym or any fitness studio and they find a trainer that they like, they feel lucky, like, oh crap, I found a trainer that's actually good at their job. And she's lives her fitness. She doesn't tell me to do shit that she doesn't do or hasn't done before. You know, it's like a miracle. When the truth is, this is a job with skills, right? You shouldn't be surprised when you go to a mechanic and your water pump fucking works. Like, oh my God, the mechanic fixed my water pump and it works. You shouldn't be surprised. There should be so much skilled fitness in your area, right? And there's a ton in here in California. There should be so many skilled trainers that any one of them that you go to has something to offer you that's worth the price tag, and you don't have to get surprised. And I feel like fitness is really governed by that price tag, right? People contact me every week, and the first question they have is, how much are you, right? And it's because they're shopping around. They're shopping around because there's so much misinformation out there. There's so many grandiose claims about how to lose body fat, how to tone your arms, how to change your diet, and how much are you supposed to eat when you're meal prepping, and how much cardio are you supposed to do before or after lifting, and is it safe for me to do 5x5s? And all these things that people want to know if I'm going to pay you $80 a session, $120 a session at some gym here in Sunnyvale, $150 a session. Am I going to get all that info? And the truth is, if your trainer is crappy, it doesn't matter if you're paying them $10 a session. You're wasting your time. And if a trainer can charge you $150 a session, but they know just as much as the $30 an hour trainer, don't pay for the freaking $150, pay for the $30. And the sad thing is that oftentimes there's no delineation, no difference between those two types of trainers. So as someone with a lot of experience, I want to go through and motivate you guys so that you can do most of it on your own. I'm not saying don't talk to trainers. Definitely talk to a trainer. I think every human being, at least once in their life, should be talking to a trainer or a fitness expert. And those are my keys. And it doesn't have to be you don't have to be sedentary or a pro athlete. I think everybody benefits from talking to a fitness pro. So, as I have said, I have 15 years of experience, CSCS certified. I started boxing since I was 20, in my mid 30s now. And I have a lot of advice to give. I want to keep everyone motivated. The other thing I'll talk a lot about on this Heart of a Fighter podcast is the fight game, right? The fight game's got a lot of my interest. As mainstream as it's becoming, it's still kind of niche. I still say niche. And so I do want to talk about that because it has a lot to do with my fitness. People love their kickboxing, love their boxing technique. I mean, people you never know or never took a martial art in their life want to learn so much boxing. And I have friends who open gyms because they're pros. And I'm thinking of one guy. And he can just only teach boxing and conditioning to people. He doesn't need to teach them. He doesn't ever have to have them pick up a barbell at all. And these are men, these are women in equal forms. And speaking of women, you know, I hope that there's women listening in to the podcast because that's a huge percentage of people that train, right? My experience, it's like women have no problem and no egos about going to see a trainer. They'll, you know, go in, talk to the manager, talk to the trainer directly, go to a few classes, dip their toe in the bath water, see if it's too hot, go talk to one trainer, you know, and get hooked up training. And men will do all this stuff on our own, right? We'll collect all this info from different trainers, compile it on our own, but we're reluctant. And even when we get to the point where the trainer, like me, is saying, I know exactly what I can do for you, they're still shopping around, so... You know, but I will say that once you guys find a trainer that you like, you're pretty loyal. But I think that's everyone. But guys, we really want to get the nitty gritty of a program down before we commit. And women comprise a bulk of training, so there's much more like variety in the type of clients, and much more on that spectrum of personalities that goes to see trainers. It's mostly women. And one of the things I always look at in training every day, music. I listen to music when I'm training people. I love my music. I love my hip hop. I love more my reggae. You know, you can't always play reggae when you're training. I feel like when you're drilling or hitting mitts, smashing pads, reggae's fantastic, you know. Nothing sets the tone better, in my opinion, than some reggae, but... not the best if you got a big old class sometimes, right? So I listen to a lot of stuff. I stay off the radio. And so I want to like critique and review stuff on occasion. So we'll talk about fitness and nutrition. We'll talk about the fight game, right? And we'll talk about music. And all of it's going to be to motivate you. And to parse out all the bad information out there, but more importantly, to orient you to the good stuff. So like I said, a lot of experience in the game. I have a nutrition degree. I have trained thousands of people, tens of thousands of hours. And right now, because we're new, you know, and I'm not getting paid for the podcast here. Hope to do it like once a week. I want to keep it not short. And since I'm not getting paid, I want you guys, the people who decide to listen and who get something useful from it, to share it, pass it around, mainly to share it, all right? And the website is heartofafighter.com, not .org, heartofafighter.com. And I got some content on there already about workouts, types of workouts, and a lot of stories. It helps people when trainees hear stories of other people that were in their shoes who succeed. I don't want to see a guy, I don't go to a boxing or a kickboxing coach who hasn't had fights, right? Because I've had competitions. So I want someone that's done more than I have, right? At the fitness level, that's like, oh, this person can lift. This person lifts four times a week, so they should train me. Now, I think you want someone that lives a lifestyle and has done it for years, has come back from injury, has come back from maybe being depressed, has come back from losing their job, from life-changing stuff, has done the grind for a while. And they don't have to be in their 30s or 40s or 50s to have lived a life. Nah, but you want someone that has an innate quality that smacks of experience when you go to get your trainer. And that's just the sniff test, right? You should be able to use your instincts on a trainer to see the long-term success. Like, when I fucking go back to my old habits and I start, you know, being lazy again, when I, you know, I'm accident prone, I tend to get into a lot of accidents at work or whatever, maybe I want to know that when that day comes, my trainer's going to know exactly how to keep me motivated, right? Too bad that we're so fixated on the short-term shit. And a lot of all diets are fixated on short-term success. And people will always get short-term success with training and trainers, because that's what the industry is geared towards. Instead, we want to look for long-term stuff, right? Anyway, that's what I want the podcast to be about. All right. I will pull articles that I see or real-life discussions that I hear from my clients. And again, you know, I think it matters that you guys hear from other people that are like you, that want to, say, set up their home gym, and they buy the right equipment. Is it really the right equipment? Did I buy the right size plates? I'm doing chest twice a week. I do my biceps after I do my chest. Why the fuck am I not getting bigger arms? Why do I want bigger arms? Right? Okay, I can give you my theory. I could give you all the experience I know. I could tell you why you're doing too few reps. I could tell you why you should start doing Olympic lifts or maybe standard weightlifting. You know, but I think this is a place where you guys are going to be able to hear my experience with other people who've had similar issues. And I mean, in 15 years, I've had people with all kinds of issues come in to see me about mostly getting lean, losing weight, recovering from injuries is huge. There's a giant pocket of the world, of the communities, that especially if you're, you know, I see the worst injuries are from athletic people, like people who used to play college football or college soccer, and they'll injure themselves badly, like they need 2-3 surgeries, they're on pain pills for months, all that. But the most nagging chronic injuries are from the opposite people, in my experience. Like, it's people who are working, driving 30 minutes a day to work, who sit a lot, who go to the gym and try to like bang out the opposite of what they were doing all day. Oh, I got to get my squats in today. Got to go back squat today. We're doing 5x5. We're doing 5x8s today. And then they walk into the gym and they can't perform, so they push themselves. I see a lot of injuries from like nagging injuries. Tennis elbow is a big one. Shoulders. Guys, I'm surprised any of us fucking, like every guy I know has shoulder issues. Everyone that played high school football, that's a guy. I don't know how many women, but how many, if you're a guy and you played high school football, your shoulders are dog shit. I already know, you know? Mine, it took me years to come back from mine, but God dang, all you guys have the worst shoulders ever. I don't know what it is. I know exactly what it is. We bench too damn much, too damn quickly. And, you know, when I was younger, 20 years ago, right, when we started bench pressing, there wasn't a core. You didn't learn about your fucking core and how to engage it and activate it. What was your core? Why the shit wouldn't you do 10 reps of everything? Just do 10, all right? Just do 10. And I was able to at least play football for, you know, a long time and be like the worst bench presser ever. And have the Sabercats give me another look, even though I scratched the bench press during the tryout. It's like, we saw a bunch of plays. We saw bigger dudes in the gym. They ain't there no more, but we saw big dudes in the gym start to bench press stuff, and we're like, oh, that's how you do that. You just fucking grunt. You raise your lower lumbar spine off the bench, and you, ugh. But really, though, I'm starting to learn more about the technique of doing a bench press. Not just from being around unbelievably good trainers. When I started along my current career path, unbroken chain of training in the last 11 years. But from watching the skinny motherfuckers in the gym in San Jose and around here, the skinniest dudes that when they start bench pressing got triceps that are like gigantic. Like, where do those come from? Their triceps look like they're alive, right? These guys will hit the bench because they're watching YouTube. They're looking at professional weightlifters. They're looking at the technique. They're watching the guys who break down the technique. They're going to the gym and practicing at fucking midnight, you know, probably. And there's not a big audience there. They're going to the gyms that are popping up like fucking acne on a 12-year-old's face around here. They're going to the new strength and conditioning gyms, and they're learning how to bench press, and they're practicing. They're learning, finally. The public is learning about strength to weight ratios, and they know, oh, I'm 150 pounds. I should be able to bench press at least 180 pounds one time. And so they're looking at that. They're knowing, they're figuring out that they can compete in these things. And they go in and practice, and they put their, you know, the base of their skull down first, and then they push their feet underneath. Then they're arching their back and pulling in their core, you know, and then they're going through two reps, and they know exactly what their two rep maximum should be. That stuff needs to be talked about more to the public. There shouldn't be a reason that everyone doesn't practice these techniques, because they're all viable. And even if you're a 150-pound woman and you're going to bench press, you should know your strength to weight ratio, right? I feel like everybody, and it's, don't leave it just up to Orange Theory to let you know what your target heart rate should be, right? This is stuff that fitness experts should have been explaining a long time ago. Why, when I watch Jillian Michael, why when I see that she has a video out, and or Shanti, and I see these guys, and I, you know, I never bought P90X with Horton and all this, so I don't know this for a fact, but why isn't like the first conversation about what your exact target heart rate should be? Tell me, educate me on what muscles are being break out, dust off your Latin, and tell me what your latissimus is, and your tensor lates, and your psoas muscles are supposed to be doing. It's important, you know. So empowerment and motivation is why I'm here. And today, I think I'll talk about my last article. And this article was written, I think, like 2 or 3 months ago on Heart of a Fighter, right? And the name of the article is exactly Real Reasons Smoking Weed and Working Out Motivates You to Move. And this is in the spirit of the anti or deprohibition legalization of marijuana in California, which it's about fucking time, right? I don't even smoke weed anymore, but it's about fucking time, right? And you can find this article on heartoffighter.com. Just type in the title, probably verbatim, and you'll find it. And I wrote this thing to investigate, like, how much does marijuana, or as I call it, weed, help you? I call it bud. I call it weed. I don't call it pot, even though the rest of the world seems to call it pot. When I was smoking weed, I'd say, let's go get some bud. Let's go get keyed. You got any herb? No. I don't know. My whole family's Jamaican, so they all call it ganja, but they're not saying it to be cool. The ones who do still puff, you know, in their 70s. But I try to investigate with this article just based on, like, I tried to pick the most penultimate example that I could and investigate briefly if smoking weed is actually a benefit for working out. And what I did was I remembered one of my good friends, call him Sergio, and he was a boxer that I knew when I started boxing here in San Jose, Dreamland. And he came when I was like probably like 20 when I met him, and he was older than me. He's probably like 10 years older than me, and he was the only brother in there, the only other black dude in there. At the time, everyone else was Mexican. There's one white guy. And there's a few brothers that came by there. A few of them, three, four, five at one point. Anyway, this is when Dreamland started. Race doesn't matter. I don't care how many. But the point is, he was cool because I always felt like he was very talkative. Then he would teach some of the classes, and he was about his business. I remember him being a coach. He was about his business. He would really teach me how to throw punches, but not only that, he would teach me like the theories why. And here's the deal, like, even if you're going to train at ilovekickboxing.com, or if you're going to train at like one of these boxing gyms, I won't disparage any of them, but even if it's cardio kickboxing, your coach should be explaining why you would throw certain combos together. And if you find yourself throwing a ton of lead uppercuts, followed by rear uppercuts, followed by right hooks as combos, your coach doesn't really know much about boxing. It's entirely possible to get certified with a video or just watching hella title boxing videos where Roger Mayweather teaches his punch mitt combinations, right? There's an epic title boxing video from, I believe, the mid-90s, and it is a more spry, though similarly slurred, speeched Roger Mayweather teaching young amateur fighters at, I believe, the play, like somewhere I thought it was like in Colorado. He's teaching these kids basically the punch combinations that he does with Floyd. So Mayweather's teaching people how to do this punch combination. And I got this video from one of my friends who was a trainer, who also gave me my first TRX about 10, 11 years ago. And we started practicing. Now you see a lot of guys on Instagram, IG, busting out with that Roger Mayweather stuff, you know, and they're teaching it, pop, pop, bomb, under, pull, pull under, pull under. And they're doing these combos and they look sick. You know, hey, they learned that off this video. It's very, very enlightening video. And Roger Mayweather, man, that guy is a brilliant boxing mind. And if you want to know about boxing, sure, take your classes, but ask a lot of questions about why you would throw this versus that, right? Anyway, this guy, when we both went to the gym one day, right? The Dreamland it still is there, but the owner, rests in peace, and he at one point wasn't having a lot of success with his nonprofit boxing gym, and it was closed. So we go there on Saturday, and that was the day we used to go and train, and the whole team used to go over there, and all those guys went to fights together, and one of them won the 2006 or 7 super heavyweight gold gloves, and we went over there, and I'm looking inside, and I'm seeing all new stuff. It's real pretty. I turn to my right, and there's another brother walking up with dreads and a beanie, and he's like, damn, it's closed today. And we link up, and I'm like, oh, shit, Sergio? He's like, Johan? And we're like immediately, like, by coincidence, you know, reunited. And so we exchanged numbers and we talked about training. So I invited him to one of the first times we hung out after that, he invited me on a run. And before the run, he would like, you pull out his blunt and you'd start taking rips off it, right? And I mean, I knew guys who played football and they're smoking cigarettes in the parking lot. I'm thinking of one guy in particular. You know, it's not a major deal. And it's not like it's going to affect your cardio negatively so much. I just think whatever gives you that edge is probably helpful. And so he would smoke. Right? He'd smoke before and then we'd go run. And of course, he's kicking my ass on these runs. He's like 5'10", 5'11", 147 pounds. And he just like, he had the most fluid running motion. He'd just crush me running. He'd fucking lap me, right? And he'd talk about, oh, I'm going to do 4 miles today. You want to do it? And I'm like, no, bro. Let me start with a fucking mile. Let me start with 1 mile. And he'd be like, what? That's it? And I'm like, bro, that's it. And we do these laps. He crushed me easily. And he was running probably 7-minute miles. And then he'd try and get me to smoke. Because I had retired from smoking weed in 2005. I just stopped for the most part. Tapered down. And then he'd ask me a couple times. Well, one night he comes to my apartment. And he sees me packing out my apartment. It's like 2012. And he sees me packing it out. And he's like, hey, I got something. So he puts out a blunt. I take a couple hits. And I'm lit. I'm silly. And as I'm sitting there lit, I'm thinking, all right, this is going to be a lot better to pack my boxes up. And I'm just going to take my time. And so over the next couple days, I go to his place. He comes to my gym. We start training. He meets some of the trainers at my place. He's telling me, hey, I want to go pro. I got one more chance. And I mean, he looks like he could do it. He's shredded. He's got a six pack. He's all muscle. He's telling me he's eating once or twice a day. He's running fucking all the time. I don't know if he ran 6 days a week or what, but I believe it was at least 5. he's doing a little weightlifting at his complex, his house, and like he looks like a monster, right? And so I put on the body pad and whip out the mitts, and he hits like, you know, fuck, he hits like a Mack truck. I can feel all of his punches for 145 pounds. I'm at the time about 188. I feel his punches. I'm so surprised. It was amazing. And then he's telling me he only eats when he's hungry and he didn't really get hungry. And I was like very impressed with his work ethic. He's getting me to run on Saturdays. He's lapping me and this other guy who ends up opening his own gym. He's lapping us, and I'm just impressed by him. And so in my article, I kind of explore it. So what I remember about this guy was he was always fucking talking. He was always trying to run, which, listen, if you're a fighter, if you're an amateur fighter, and you're not running, you might want to consider another line of work or another, or just kind of train to help other people get better. I don't understand why even pro MMA, look, I know Chris Areola exists, but I don't get it. Look, male or female, why are you not running if you're a pro MMA fighter? Like, the question, do you do road work, isn't even a question. If I'm training a boxer and you're not running, we're not training, because what's the point? I don't understand it. And a lot of these guys around here that I came up with on the scene, like boxing and stuff, man, they all love to run. And I always felt like I was like the one dude that just fly. Look, I know everyone hates running, but I fucking wouldn't do it if these coaches didn't make us run. And he was also, Sergio was very like determined. So like the one day we were sparring. Right, so we started hitting mitts. We decided, let's go. I will coach him. I'll get my USA boxing license renewed. And I'll take him to fights, local fights, get his name up. Then he and him, me and him, would go back to the venerable Dreamland Boxing, talk to the late Sarge and say, hey, this guy's good. He's got fights. We want to get the pro stuff. And he had heard that this other kid there was being looked at by, I believe, Al Haymon at the time. I'm pretty sure. Let's do this. And we said it would probably take us like 9 months. So we were looking for that first fight. So I started getting my shit together. And he started, kept working out like a fiend. And you know, we kept being friends. We're real good friends. And, you know, he worked at Intel, at the front of Intel. And remember one day we sparred. We sparred a few times, but one day, I believe it was probably the first time. And I'm thinking, you know, if I'm going to coach this guy, I have to at least be able to show him some new shit. And we're sparring. And I mean, he's coming after me, man. I mean, no headgear. We just put in our mouthpieces. We wrapped our hands. He had 12-ounce gloves, some brand new Everlasts. And I had my ringside 16s on. So we started going. Just mouthpieces, no headgear. And he's firing away at me on my body because I'm covering my head. And he's firing away. I get close. I don't keep him away with a jab. He ducks underneath. He fires at my body. So I don't remember how I set it up, but he stepped in and bam. I laid into him with a left lead to the chest. Caught him. He went down right away. And I mean, I hit him on the button because he went down right away. And he was in pain. He went from, I remember, he'd make that noise as he threw it. He's like, ha, and I hit him right in the chest. And as soon as I hit him, he went, ah. and went straight to the ground. And afterward, he pulled out two vaporizers, and I took a hit off the liquid one, the vaporizer for liquid. He had one for flower. And I remember we took hits inside the gym on a Saturday. And it was the first time I had been high since this was the second time. This was the first time I got high in a couple years, really. And we sat there, and it was sunny, and we talked about our strategy and talked about the future and how we're going to get in. And so here's a guy who would run 4 miles a day, 4 to 6 miles a day. He would he started sparring at the PAL when he could. The coaches weren't really feeling him, though. He felt like he's too old, and they got those young bucks, and they don't want to fuck him up. And he started we're hitting pads a lot, and he's doing light weightlifting. And we started doing all the weightlifting. We would drop the medicine ball on our stomachs to tighten up our stomachs. To me, still one of the best ways to get a boxer's midsection condition. It's old school as shit, but nothing in my life ever prepared me for body shots like having someone drop a medicine ball on your stomach or throwing it at your chest. Like, it's brutal. It's about as brutal as it. Or doing the drill where you have your partner punch your stomach for a round or something. Like, you have to do those things. If you're a fighter, if you're not doing those things as a boxer, like, you're in the wrong. Like, you might want to just take up podcasting or another hobby. Me, I did both, but Sergio was very highly motivated, right? Obviously. Did his weed help him? Well, it helped us have a great conversation about what he did wrong and what he could do better. It helped us flesh out his ambitions to be a top shelf fighter. And I mean, he didn't pig out, right? So I don't think it had a negative effect on the way he ate. Clearly his cardio, as I take some water, was okay. But I will say that when I was younger and I would get high and then smoke and then work out, I remember being very dialed into my body. Very, very keyed into my body and what it was doing. And so maybe Sergio felt that when he was sparring, when he was working mitts. There's a couple of articles that are pretty popular online. Ren's Call from 2016 does write that small doses help with the stress of intense workouts. While O'Connor in 2012, I'm citing sources like a fucking eighth grader here, says that chronic use can impair technical movement. But I'm talking anecdotally. And the long and the short, as they say, of it is, I felt like it helped him. I felt like it helped him in the medium term. Because we never got them fights. We never got to showcase his talents. And yeah, a lot of this shit, the shit of boxing is political, you know, kind of like being the second string on your high school football team, volleyball team, but you're really better than the starter. And she's out there doing her shit, and you're like, wait, I'm better than her, right? It's political. Well, if you're an amateur boxer, you're an amateur fighter, there's only one way. It's to train hard all the time and trust your coach and find a coach that you like. And you have to shop around for coaches that you like. All good boxing coaches who have experience are going to teach you how to box. Now you have to find a rhythm and you have to gel. Right? It's less esoteric than, say, just fitness. Dude, is weed keep him away from the long-term success? Maybe, but I also know he had another kid on the way. But in the year that we trained together, it was on and off. And we trained for like 6 or 8 weeks at a time, and then we'd take a break. I saw a phenomenal work ethic. I saw a guy who was very focused. I saw a guy who was very strong and who had very nuanced control of his eating. And in those veins, hell yeah. Smoking weed probably benefits you. As far as the psychomotor functions of what, you know, how do your fine motor units respond to weed? There's not a ton of stuff out there, right? Because who knows? And honestly, if you live out here in the Bay Area, know that probably like 30% of the people who are in the weight room right now are high off their ass. And they're not dropping weights on their faces and stuff like that, right? So, yeah, we all want to be like the Diaz brothers and be top elite level legendary fighters and also, you know, puff as much as we want to, right? So I think that it is doable, right? I think it is doable. But I also think that your mentality, your own work ethic, your education, your willingness to accept education and training have a lot to do with how your efficacy with your long-term goals is going to pan out. You want to go pro, nothing's going to stop your ass if you really want it. Anything is possible if you want it. Bad enough. It's cliche, but the truth is you start noticing openings where there weren't any before when you have a negative headspace. When you want something bad, you start to notice, right, that there's opportunity where you wouldn't have seen it in a negative headspace. And because you start to notice opportunity where you thought there wasn't any, you take more risks. And those risks, you learn, aren't that big a deal. With him, I felt like he just slowed down on his training because he got tired of being shut out of the game when he wasn't getting exactly what he wanted. And that's a fair, especially when you're a father and you have a job, that's a fair, reasonable normative response. No one's going to sue you for just saying, fuck it. I did my very best. I did my best and it didn't happen in this timeline. Right? I don't think that was because he smoked a lot of bud. I think it was because he just moved on. But as far as smoking weed and working out goes, it seems to me that if you're someone who likes weed and likes working out, doing them together seems to be helpful, I think. But if you're someone that doesn't like being high, just don't even get high and then don't even worry about working out. And if you're someone that doesn't like to work out, I doubt you're still listening to this first podcast. So, anything else in fitness that we could look at these days? I'm not really interested right now in basketball yet because the Dubs beat the crap out of everyone. And that's just a given. The Rockets feel like they got a chance, I guess, but I don't care really. Not until I start. I'm a fair weather guy who dips in like May. But I think it's still pretty epic what they're doing. I don't want to talk about the past fights just right now because there's not really enough time. It's January. Still, January and February are the months where fitness and personal training from our end, from the business side, becomes one of the most impactful, lucrative time of the year, right? January and February. So, hey, you know what? Take advantage of those deals. Take advantage of all the fitness opportunities. Shop for gyms that you like and take full advantage of their memberships, of the membership specials they're giving you because it's the first of the year, because it's January and February. Before you shop around for a trainer, ask questions of your trainer and take advantage of the free first workouts. If you want to do your CrossFit or you want to do your strength and conditioning, go to a strength and conditioning gym where the coach is CSCS certified or has learned from someone who's CSCS certified or has at least 9 years experience in the game. If you're looking to compete, you want to be a NPC bodybuilder, ladies who want to do that figure and bikini and physique even, find someone who's done it before and who's placed in the top three, right? Top three as an amateur competitor, because there is a metric ton of coaches who can take you to shows, but they haven't placed higher than fifth or sixth. And guess what? You're a woman and you're 5'8". Ain't gonna be a whole ton of 5'8 ladies out there weighing 120. You might just win that shit by default. So look for a coach that's placed in the top three of their category at least once. I would say even top four. Why not? Four. Four or five. Go with four. And then for guys, look for someone that, and know that there are epic levels of sacrifice, but also look for someone that's placed in the top four. I might be biased because my lady is placed in top four or three, I can't remember. But as far as fitness news right now, there's not a lot that we can talk about. The last thing I will say that I can talk about is Apple Watches and Fitbits. Everybody has these that trains with me now, which I do like. They're very useful. I put on my old fucking Garmin one the other day and I was working out with it, and you know, it does the same damn thing, right? Telling me what my heart rate is, and I get to punch in the exercises. But guys, you know, you're going to use your Apple Watches, your smartwatches, and your Fitbits. Don't shut them off at convenient times. Look for these two things, okay? You can know what your resting heart rate is. It's not a big deal. It's between 60 and 75 for everyone, whatever. Know what it is when you hit your first wall. That is when you go from resting to elevated heart rate. Know what that number is. It's probably going to be between 110 and 130. Maybe not even that high, right? From that point on, when you hit your first wall, that is, you have to take your first like break during a workout. That's your lactic acid threshold. Know that. After that, know how long it takes you to get to max. If you're doing a HIIT interval, because it's a high intensity interval, right? HIIT with two I's. If you're doing a HIIT interval, it should be pretty damn fast that you get to max, which your max is 220 minus your age. But your rest period should be so short that you never, throughout your workout, drop below that number of your lactic acid threshold. This is a huge gap that encompasses both the fat burning and cardio zone, but I see a lot of people working out and their heart rate drops to like 95 or something. I'm not really sure, unless you're a competitive athlete, you got a fight coming up, you have a bodybuilding show coming up. I don't even think you need to spike your heart rate deep into bodybuilding season when you have a show, but there's almost no reason when you're working out to let your heart rate drop that low unless you're lifting heavy. Unless you're lifting 3 to 2 rep maxes. Know those three. Know your lactic acid threshold, aka when you hit your first wall. Know the amount of time. Just kind of guess how long it takes you to reach your maximum heart rate and know what your max heart rate is. Guys, yeah. Thanks for listening to the premiere podcast. It's Wednesday. So I'll try to do it on Wednesdays. Email me, johan@johanunderdogtraining.com. Follow Underdog Training on Facebook. Follow Heart of a Fighter on Facebook. Heart of a Fighter family. And most of all, Twitter, @CoachJohan. Yeah, please share this and email me questions so I can have more stuff to talk to you about. And thank you for tuning in, of course, and have a good week and weekend. All right, cool.